Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This segment brought to you by True Green, alongside Tom Thayer, Zach Zapin with you, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Just spent the last few minutes talking with Pro Football Hall of Famer Richard Dent, good friend of Michael Jordan. It was interesting to hear how they became buddies, and it's been essentially a friendship that's lasted from the mid-80s till now, when one was a superstar for the Bulls and the other one was the Super Bowl 20 MVP, one of the best players in the National Football League, one of the best players on the 1985 Bears. That's the difference between the two sports. You know, with basketball, you can be that one Hall of Famer and take somebody, take an entire group of people to the next level. In football, you need a whole bunch of great players in order to win a championship. And we are pleased to be joined by one of our good friends. It's become a weekend staple here on The Score, where we spend a majority of our final hour visiting with Cubs radio analyst Ron Coomer. Joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Coomdog, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Double Z, Tommy, how are you boys doing this weekend?
We're doing good, Coomdog. Hey, Coom, I had a question. It's kind of been, I've been interested all week, and I wanted to ask you about it. So when you get back up to the broadcast booth and you're calling a game and there's no crowd in the stands for maybe at the beginning, would it temper the volume of your excitement or the volume of your disappointment because that sound can transfer right down to the playing field, whether it's the batter or the dugouts? And so I was interested to see, you know, to get your feel on it, how you'd control that.
Tommy, it's a great question. You know what? I don't know if I have the answer yet, to be honest with you. I've never really broadcast. I've done some college games when I first retired from playing, and that was at the University of Minnesota's field. And there weren't a lot of people, and you were sitting right behind the people. And then you're probably only, you know, maybe 50 rows from home plate. So they, you know, if you're yelling, you could probably be heard, especially if you use the sports voice, you know, where you got to project on a field. I don't know. I don't know. You know what? I hope not is probably the best way to describe it, because I get really excited when things happen on the field, and you can tell the disappointment when things happen poorly. Does that make you a homer? Maybe a little bit, but the, you know, we're working for the Cubs, so that's fine by me. I do think there'll be some of that, but I hope it doesn't come out in our broadcast, to be honest with you.
Well, I was listening to the broadcast before Zach and I got on the radio, and it was an extra inning game that the Cubs win 3-2 over the San Francisco Giants. And so I'm trying to keep your and Pat's voice in it and then take the crowd away from it. And I'm thinking about how excited you got and how much that win meant against the Giants at that time. But I'm also thinking about your voice carrying down to the Giants dugout, because there is no celebration there. I'm sure it's a lot like a football sideline or locker room, where it's a lot quieter after defeat. And so, you know, and I was wondering if you know, for me, because, you know, football open air broadcasting, we're so close to the field that if you're trying to make a correction of a specific technique or a fundamental that you see somebody doing wrong, and that's the reason they're getting beat or susceptible to giving up, you know, to getting beat, you know, I don't want to change the volume of that, but you know, that's what I was, you know, thinking about you guys all week, and if it would factor it in your broadcasting.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So let's say you're talking about to the negative side about, for instance, like the San Francisco Giants guys. I don't think that would affect my thought on what I'm saying. But let's say it's a Cubs guy, a Cubs player. Do you want to be critical enough and loud enough, like you normally would, that they might be able to hear you on the field? That is a great question. And there's always times where we describe the action. Let's say Pat will call the play, but then you and I would come back and describe what we saw in the how and why, right? So you would, you know, he hit the ball on the ground and it turned into a double play because he did this and this, and that was the result. And you're critical of maybe the mechanics of the swing or, you know, not understanding how they were going about trying to get him out. And, you know, some players can be sensitive to that. And so it will be something we'll have to think about. But, you know, hopefully we just call the game as we see it, same way we always have been. You know, and it's going to be very different because even though, you know, you're going to have the field noise of the crack of the bat and things like that, you're definitely not going to get drowned out by the crowd.
Something too, Coombs, is, you know, because sometimes the message is lost in the translation, because I had a player come up to me and confront me about something I said about him in the course of the game that was told to him by a third-party aunt that she got it completely wrong about what I was trying to say and a correction I was making for him. So if you say it in a stadium where there is no crowd, they probably have a better chance of hearing it firsthand. Then being told by someone that really didn't understand what they were listening to, and they got the point to him incorrectly, and that person, that player, comes up and confronts you. So I don't know if it's in baseball, if a message is ever transferred from the radio to a family to the player back to Ron Cooper.
Oh yeah, it definitely happens. There's no doubt about it. I've had people ask me about things that I've said about their swing or about hitting or, you know, and I just say, guys, this is how I was taught. This is what I see. I'm getting paid to tell the story. That's the story. That's what I see. You know, I played a long time too, just like you're doing, you know, and that's how we tried to correct it. That's what we did. That's how we were taught. You know, you're not going to get everything right. The one thing that I always say though, when I'm on a broadcast about something like this, is I try to keep it impersonal. It's just about that swing or that play. And I try to get to it, get off of it, and then let everybody, if it's something bad or really bad for a ball game or for the team, you know what? Our game is very difficult to play, just like football, like everything. And, you know, I would say something along the lines of, if he looked at that, he would understand that that's what happened. That's kind of how I go about it.
Ron Coomer is with us on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I think that you just broadcast the game. You've been doing it your entire post-playing career life, if you will. And I think there's only one way that you got to be yourself. You can't all of a sudden start calling a baseball game like golf if things are going badly for the team that you're broadcasting for, or if I think you just call the game. What will be weird, and I do think that both of you guys brought up this point, you probably never broadcast a game where if you said something critical or interesting or loud that has generated a turn back from a player where they crank the neck and look up at the broadcast booth. But I promise you that's going to happen at least once or twice in both baseball and football if fans are not in the stands this season, don't you think?
I do. I haven't thought about it much, but I do think that's going to happen. There's no doubt. With no fans and your Wrigley Field and the way things can echo around that ballpark, we know that during batting practice when there's no fans in the park. You know, if I bellow out a, hey, you know, from the booth, to somebody on the field, they hear me. And you know that, Zach, and it's going to happen. You know, what are you going to do? That's the world we're living in right now.
Before we hit the break, I think one of the coolest stories, and you've said this a few times on the air during Cubs games, when you were a visiting player in Detroit at Old Tiger Stadium, yeah. When Ernie Harper, share it with us.
You want to do it right now?
Should we do it when we?
Yep, we can do it quickly. Let's do it quickly. I was a young rookie player, and I knew all about Ernie Harwell because the broadcasters, you know, I always followed teams and followed their broadcasters, Vin Scully, Jack Brickhouse, obviously Harry, and all the big-name broadcasters. I always loved listening to them, and Ernie Harwell in Detroit did the Tiger games in an old Tiger stadium. Tommy, I don't know if you've ever been there, but if you hit a foul ball straight behind home plate, it was on the broadcast. It was half the distance from how far Wrigley is to home plate from our broadcast booth. Half the distance. And I remember going up to home plate, and it was the first time I was playing in Tiger Stadium, and I'm having a pretty good game. I'd already hit a home run in the game, and I'm walking to home plate, and it got kind of quiet in Tiger Stadium. And it's my first time there, and I'm thinking, and I'm hearing something, and I'm like, that's Ernie Harwell. He's broadcasting the game, and I can hear him out of his booth at home plate. So I started to dig in, and I stepped out and called time. And I go, I'm going to listen to what Ernie Harwell is saying about me right now.
I love that story.
It's terrible, but it's true. I know.
Because what people don't know about Coom is he wasn't just a guy who loved playing when he was a kid. He was also mimicking what the announcers were doing. He was like us, you know, the people that couldn't play and loved the old-time announcers, especially, I mean, and the Cubs have a legendary group. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk more about this on the other side. Plus, I wanted to, because Tom and I started talking about this last hour, our thoughts on The Last Dance, now that we've seen all 10 episodes and we haven't had a chance to talk to you and get your take on it. We will next. Ron Coomer with us for the 7 o'clock hour. Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer with you on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 85 Bear, Tom Thayer is here. I'm Zach Zaidman. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And we're joined this hour by the Coom Dog, Cubs radio analyst Ron Coomer. And we've been talking a lot about the dynamics of broadcasting and how that'll change when both sports that you guys broadcast, baseball and football, get underway this season. And it looks as though there will be a football season and perhaps a baseball season this year, albeit without fans in the stands. And Tom, as you were saying, it could potentially alter the way you go about broadcasting a game.
And so, Ron, it kind of leads me to my next question. So when you think of Jeff Joniak doing a Devin Hester punt return or a kickoff return, there's kind of a way you recognize how it's going, what the possibilities of it could be, and then you kind of address your broadcast of that one play as it concludes. And that's something that players would look up to the booth because of Jeff is at such a loud tone doing this. Now, I want to ask you about a home run call. Do you know a home run as soon as it leaves the bat, number one? And number two, would you have to curtail the enthusiasm of it because you have to see if it's going out or not, or do you recognize it immediately?
I would say, for me, about 95% of the time, I know a ball. When a guy clicks on one, it's going to be a home run. Not all the time. And Wrigley Field can be a little difficult with that, Tommy, because of the weather conditions. When the wind is blowing in, it can make it very difficult. When the wind's blowing out, very easy. The ball's hit on the barrel, and the ball takes off. It jumps off the bat. It's going out of the park. Other ballparks, you know, kind of play the same, a lot of other ones. So the weather doesn't play as big an impact, or the wind, that it does at Wrigley Field. I actually, there are times where I try to help, you know, in knowing. The other thing that I've trained myself to do as a broadcaster, because I'm not calling the home run, Pat is 99% of the time now, or Zach is. What I do when the ball is hit and I see it taken off, instead of continuing to follow the ball, I look at the hitter. And I've trained myself to pick up the hitter right away. The hitter will always tell you if he got it or not. And sometimes it tricks you a little bit because of the weather conditions. But a guy like Rizzo or a guy like Schwarber, if I think they hit it, I track the ball for a couple snaps of your finger, and then I'll immediately look down at them because I think it's going to be a home run. They'll tell you for sure with their body actions if it's a home run. And I was the same way as a player. If I clicked on one and I knew it was gone, you know, I didn't show the opposing team up at all. I just dropped my bat, but I went into a jog immediately, and I knew it was going to be a home run. So they'll tell you on the field, but it's tough for a play-by-play guy to see that because he's tracking the baseball.
Yeah, you have to track the baseball. But one of the and Kuma, I'll give you even more credit. I'll say your percentage rate is about 97.8% because this is one of the coolest things about our booth. If a ball is hit and it might be, you know, you'll hear Pat say this one's got a chance, or you know, I'm tracking it and I'm following the outfielder, because to me the outfielder generally gives you a pretty good indication if the ball's going to leave the yard. But Coombe knows way beforehand, and if it's gone, he'll pump his right fist up in the air, and you know, as like he's an umpire, and you know right away. And only one time I got fooled, right? I think there's only been one time where, and to Coombe's credit, he took the blame on the air. He didn't have to do that, but he's almost always spot on with that. It's one of the cool inside tricks. Just like Tom, when you're watching a football game, you almost always can see where the penalty's coming from before everybody else.
Yeah, it's just uncanny. I love listening to Tommy, because instantly there are times in our restaurant where I'll have the radio broadcast on, but I'll have the TV on. And we're listening to you. And I'm looking at the field, and I'm just a fan for football, which is my favorite thing in the world to be able to do, is just be a fan. And I'm not a yeller or screamer or going crazy like some of our fellow Lockporters, you know, when the Bears game is going on. I just watch. But you have it immediately what's happening on a field, and that's part of being, you know, in the league a long time and doing your job well and understanding what's going on. And it's fun to hear that. It really is.
Well, you know, it's different. It's kind of reading the balance of the play. There are so many things that you filter: the down and distance, the stances of the offensive lineman, the position of the quarterback, the formation. So there's a lot of things that you're pre-thinking, and then you can understand how a player can get out of position where he's got to react in, you know, in some type of infraction way. And so it's something that's easy to read, but it's years of just watching the way the game unfolds according to the down and distance. And you know, and it's kind of funny, because I used to have these discussions with Richard Dent, and it was more of what does a defensive lineman, what is the information that he's filtering through as soon as the offense breaks the huddle. And it's weird, because he's thinking completely different than what I'm thinking as an offensive player. So, you know, when you think about two sides of the ball, it's, you know, you're kind of, you know, you're working at, you know, both ends of the spectrum there.
So would you ask Richard, it was a great, great interview, by the way. I could listen to you guys talk. I've met Richard quite a few times at Mike's restaurant downtown, or, you know, at some of the places, you know, or charity events. Great guy, just a really nice human being. But would you share some of the little intricacies of your position to help him on the other side of the ball, or vice versa?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about it is the practices were so competitive. If you were ever giving a tell that they, you know, those guys would be the first to tell you. And when you talk about, you know, the experience of Richard, you got to go right down the line of scrimmage with the intelligence of Hampton and McMichael and the way they worked William Perry into it, the experiences of Mikey Hartenstein. So, yeah, there'd be a lot of times that you could see Richard Dent and Jimbo Covert off to the side having a discussion amongst themselves, whether they're talking about a great pass rusher that Jimbo Covert's going to face or that what Jimbo Covert could do better because he's practicing every day against a Hall of Famer and Jimbo Covert. So, you know, it's kind of weird because you can have individual discussions against the person you're playing against in a football respect, but it also it's always how it fits into the entire unit, not just you as an individual.
Ron Coomer's our guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. By the way, Eli Manning today joined Twitter for the first time. He already has nearly 108,000 followers. I bring that up because once you get on Twitter, you know, people come for you. And that includes Tom Brady, who welcomed Eli Manning to Twitter today with this, quote, "Welcome at Eli Manning. In typical fashion, you never showed up until the fourth quarter anyway." And then he's got one of those smiley face with the tongue sticking out because, of course, Eli Manning 2-0 in Super Bowls against Tom Brady. And Eli responded to Brady by saying, "Hope your golf game is as polished as your Twitter game. Don't hit it in the lumberyard." And tomorrow you've got that charity match, right, with Brady and Tiger and Phil and Peyton. And that should be a very interesting television because we haven't had a lot of sports. And granted, anytime you get those competitors out in any kind of environment, it should be fun. Which gets me to my next point. Michael Jordan. No one was more competitive than him. And Coom, we've been getting your take on The Last Dance all throughout. When we come back, I want your final thoughts after watching the entire documentary. We'll get that next. The Coom Dog is here. So's Tom Thayer. I'm Zach Zaidman. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tom Thayer's here. Zach Zaidman with you. And so is the Coom Dog. Ron Coomer spending the 7 o'clock hour with us. Tom, we've got a special Memorial Day treat for you. If you're around, you might want to listen to The Score beginning at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Memorial Day. This Monday, Coom will join me, and we will be on the air from 2 to 6 talking sports. Going to have a lot of fun guests to break a lot of things down because there's a lot happening in sports without games. But the best part to me is the stories, and that's what we've had this entire hour with you and Coom, and I thank you both for joining us and spending the time sharing your sports memories with us, which gets us to The Last Dance. Coom, Tom and I were talking about this a little bit earlier in the program about our thoughts after watching the entire documentary. And I want to hear what you have to say first, and then I will share with you what we thought and see how it meshes. What was your final takeaway after watching the last two episodes?
Well, I think first and foremost, if you go away from just talking about Michael for 1 second, the interaction that he gave ESPN and these people to film and show and do all of this while he was playing, pretty unprecedented. I've never seen anything like that before, unless you're in the locker room. So you really don't see all those, that the inside part of the sport. And then to do it with the best that's ever played the sport, that's really unique and special for people to see that. To me, the thing that stood out the most, and there's a whole bunch of things that were fun and great to watch and hear about and see, but the laser focus of the best player in a sport's history, maybe, to winning, his focus on winning in competition and the sacrifice that he was willing to make physically, mentally, emotionally, we saw family, teammates, all of these things that he was willing to give up and upset or change to win. And I don't know if I've ever seen another, I'll just say that I've never seen another player that was willing to give up or do so much to win night after night after night and to be a champion. That to me stood out it was so glaring to me that you're just like, wow, this guy just, he did it all to win a championship, and he gave his life to it, and he was the best player also. Pretty impressive.
I think, and I was talking to Tom about this earlier, the thing that stood out to me is, and you guys have both been around teams that had the potential to be a dynasty. Tom with the 85 Bears group, and they won one championship. I think at the time many felt that there would be more championships that would be won. You were around the Cubs as they were building up, and then when they won the championship in 2016, and you looked at the nucleus of that team, all those young players, the leadership from Theo Epstein, Joe Maddon on down, and I'm sure at the time, even knowing how hard it is to win a title, I'm sure, Coombe, you thought there's going to be at least one more of these moments coming up. And it's so hard to do. It's not just the opponent. It's not just injuries. What really, to me, stands out is the internal conflicts that take place with great teams. Because you're talking about, sometimes you forget because you're watching it on TV, that these are human beings. And they have the same complexities and the same issues that all of us have. And you have to overcome those in order to do what Michael Jordan was able to do. So they handled the internal conflicts and the opponents and the injuries, all the things that conspire to take you down. And he formed a true dynasty. And, you know, you just look firsthand at what you've been witness to over the last few years. That is so hard to do.
It really is. And Tommy played on one of the, probably the best Bears team, one of the best teams to ever play in the NFL. I played in New York with the Jeters and Posada and Bernie Williams and Clemens and Pettit, who had already won three championships. So you saw some, I've seen some of that from inside the locker room, and we've obviously broadcast the Cubs. I think there's a couple things that stand out in that. One is, I think Michael Jordan, Phil Jackson got to Michael Jordan eventually because he didn't like him at the beginning. He really liked Doug Collins, but I think Phil Jackson got to Jordan, and Jordan understood that Phil was correct in the sense that if Jordan didn't bring his other teammates, the let's say the second team, up to a level where they could play at an extremely high level, you weren't going to win six championships. The people that he was the hardest on were not, you never heard him with a conflict with Pippen. You don't really hear him with a conflict with Horace Grant other than talking about outside of the game. And you certainly don't hear of a conflict of Jordan and Phil Jackson. Jordan was willing to put friendships aside and bring the Steve Kerrs and all of those guys, the centers, the big guys, Wellington and what's the guy from Australia, the big center that they had?
Luke Longley.
Luke Longley. He would pick on, I mean, Jordan was a big guy, but I'd take Bill or Luke. If they got upset, he's in big trouble, man. But he would pick on these guys and bring them to whatever best level they could play. He brought them to that, not only in a game, but in practice. And that's why, come game time, they were able to perform at a level, at a championship level, night in and night out, because he never gave them a break. And that's very difficult to do, but I think there's two things that stand out. The great mental teaching of Phil Jackson and understanding his superstar player and how he ticks, and to give him some kind of chip on his shoulder, and that chip that he had year after year after year, we see was Jerry Krause. So he constantly had some ammo to go to Jordan with to get the fire underneath him to end up being a champion. To play like a champion and do what it was going to take. And Jordan went with it every single time. And so, Phil, you got to tip your hat to Phil and Michael, too. But what a competitor, man. I've never seen anything like it.
So, Coombe Dawg, I have a question for you. So if you have you talk about the players and how important their role was in the success of the Chicago Bulls at that point. So now if you looked at the Chicago Cubs and when they won the World Series, and if they won the World Series this year, I know there's a difference in managers, but you have a core players that are still there from then until now. Would there be an attachment of those two teams, or are they completely two separate teams now, but a lot of the players are still the same?
I think there's going to be an attachment to them because the star players haven't turned over. You're looking at John Lester. You're looking at Anthony Rizzo. You're looking at Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber and some of those people. So I think you're probably those players. This would, let's say they win it this year, Tommy. That would be their second one. That's how I would view it, as those guys have won two championships, because the same core star players, Kyle Hendricks, pick, you know, down the list of some of the guys that have had huge impacts on this Cubs group.
And we forget there's going to be a DH this year if there's a season. And I think that gives the Cubs even more of an advantage because you've got
some. I think Thayer's got a chance to get back in the league.
I love it.
Hey, guys, thank you so much. This has been a blast. Coom, I will see you on Monday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We've got an action-packed show right here on The Score. Tommy, thank you so much. Hopefully we get to do this again real soon. Also want to thank the Pro Football Hall of Famer Richard Dent for joining us, as well as our executive producer Chris Dickens for helping us blast through the speakers of your radio. I'm Zach Zaidman saying stay safe, be healthy. Thanks for listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Whiskey, a margarita, and a Bloody Mary, and that's the bottom line. Go Stone Cold Simpson.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.